So Perimeter has joined us. Fantastic. So today's speaker is Frank Zauzik from Utrecht, and he is going to tell us about renormalization group improved cosmologies. Frank.
Yes. Thank you very much for the invitation to speak in this seminar. And what I'm going to present here, work I did together in collaboration with Martin Reuter about a year ago. So please move to first slide. So since I have cosmology in the title of my talk, I want to start with a brief review of textbook cosmology. So if you open up your favorite textbook, you could find that evolution of our universe approximately looks like shown here. So we have the beginning of the universe, the initial singularity, where the scale factor of geometric goes to zero, and we do not know much about this part of the evolution. So later on, we find that undergoes an inflationary phase. And thanks to WMF data, this is already good evidence that this phase indeed took place. We come on even more firm ground if we move on in the evolution. Then we have a stage where nucleosynthesis takes place and the cosmic microwave background was created. And in order for this nucleosynthesis to work, we know that evolution of our universe has to be classical and radiation dominated. And if we go some 15 billion years later, we arrive at where we are today. And what we know from the equipment is that the energy density of the universe today is very close to the critical density, omega equals 1, and it separates to about 30% matter and 70% of the energy density, which is in a cosmological constant. So for the purpose of the talk, omega matter will denote anything that clumps under gravity. So I will not distinguish between baryons, dark matter, and photons. That's all contained in omega matter. And what will happen if we further evolve, then our universe will most likely end up in an asymptotic visitor state. So here the matter has been completely diluted and the universe is completely governed by the cosmological constant. Next slide. So what is now the question of the talk is, do quantum gravity effects play a role in understanding this evolution? And the question which arises is, so as this universe evolves, the initial conditions are laid very early in the Planck area, and there quantum gravity effects can be important to set up the initial conditions for the later cosmological evolution. And what we'll do in this talk is investigate the role of quantum gravity effects on this evolution. And this will be done in a particular framework, namely we will work in the framework of asymptotically safe quantum gravity. So next slide. So here's the outline of the talk. What I'm going to do is first I will review the exact renormalization group approach to Euclidean quantum gravity. And in this approach, I will obtain non perturbative beta functions which govern the randomization group flow of Newton's constant G and the cosmological constant lambda. With this information, I will then perform a randomization group improvement of the cosmological equation, and this is most likely equivalent to including the leading quantum gravity effect on the cosmological evolution. And what I will then do at the end of the talk is analyze these randomization group improved Friedman, Robertson, Walker cosmology that arise in this framework. So next slide. So before we start, let me give you a brief overview about this exact randomization group approach to Euclidean quantum gravity. Before entering into formulas, just let me describe in words what this approach is about. So the essence is that you have a path integral approach to quantize the theory of Euclidean metrics. And this particular approach is diffeomorphism invariant and leads to a background independent framework, and it is non-perturbative as you set it up. So next slide. And the crucial ingredient in this framework is a quantity called the effect average action, and in the rest of the talk will be denoted by this gamma subscript K. So what the effective average action is, in essence, is it's a Wilsonian effective action, and it includes all the quantum fluctuations whose momenta are larger than the subscript K, red cutoff scale K squared. So what you do, you start with an expansion. You integrate out quantum fluctuations down to scale K. And what this effective average action does for you, it describes at the energy scale K by just using the ethical equations are obtained from this action. So that's the principal idea. And then it's important to know that this effective average action has two limits. If we then of scale K to infinity, this effective average action corresponds to the bare or the particle action of your free. And if you take the limit that K goes to zero, you obtain the ordinary effective action, you know, from textbook quantum field theory. And the main ingredient in this approach is that we can derive an exact evolution equation for this quantity gamma k. So next slide. So let us discuss how to get this exact evolution equation. And the principal idea which underlies the construction is that we want to do a piecewise performance of the path integral. So we don't take the gravitational path integral in one step, but we are looking what happens if we integrate out small fluctuation shells around the momentum K. And the starting point to set up our framework is that we define a diffeomorphism invariant gravitational action. So here the gamma mu nu just denotes Euclidean metric, and S cross is the diffeomorphism invariant action. So what I should stress at this point is that S cross should not be identified with something like the Einstein-Hilbert action, but should be thought of as something much more general. So in principle, this action should contain all diffeomorphic invariant interactions which you can build out of your matrix, like, for example, R-squared term, higher power of the curvature, construction of Riemann tensors, and so on. Okay, let's move to the next slide. So what we do with this gravitational action is now we want to construct a scale-dependent generation function for our connected fringe function. And how this is done is indicated in the formula below. So since this formula is quite long, let's look at it piece by piece. Start with the left-hand side. Here we define this generation function. So this is denoted WK. And as in usual quantum field theory, it depends on sources, which are denoted here by T, sigma and sigma bar. And these provide sources for the metric fluctuations and the ghost. And in addition to these sources, the functional also depends on some background metric, which is denoted by G bar. And this is defined via the path integral. So let's move to the right-hand side of this formula. So in this path integral, we first have a term which corresponds to the gravitational action, which we define above. And what we do is we perform a background gauge fixing. So what we do is we decompose our general metric, the quantum metric, G mu nu, into a background metric, E bar, some arbitrary fluctuation around this background. So here I should stress that these fluctuations are not necessarily small, so there can be arbitrary fluctuations. And what this background gauge fixing method gives to you are two additional terms in your path integral. So there's one gauge fixing term, which is denoted by F, and also a ghost term, which arises from exponentiating the Fadek-Popov determinant. So depending on the measure, we can now understand that H are the metric fluctuations and C bar are the ghosts which you get from gauge fixing the diffeomorphism. In addition, the path integral contains a standard source term which couples the metric fluctuations and the ghosts to the sources T mu, sigma and sigma bar. Okay, next slide. So what is non-standard about this path integral is that it also contains a scale-dependent mass term. So this is indicated in red in the formula above. And it has structure as indicated in your formula below. So this term quadratic, the metric fluctuation, H mu nu. It contains a tensor structure, which is denoted by Z mu nu rho sigma with the index graph. And it contains a mass term, which depends on your cutoff scale K. And this is constructed from the background metric. That's indicated by the bar above the D. And the path integral also contains a similar term which contains the ghost field. But this is not spelled out explicitly. So what this term does for you, it splits the metric fluctuation in so-called fast mode, whose momenta scale are bigger than the cutoff scale, k squared, and in slow mode, where the cutoff scale is bigger and the fluctuation. And what it does is, if you perform the integration, it suppresses integrating out the slow mode by adding a mass term to them. So what is indicated in the figure to the right is a typical form of this mass term RK. For convenience, I have divided the RK by K squared, plotted that vertical axis, and I have P squared over K squared on the horizontal axis. And what you see from this diagram is that this term vanishes if your metric flux is much bigger than K squared, while if smaller than K squared, they are suppressed by this mass term. So move to the next slide. So after having set up this connected function, let's go on and define the quantity we are interested in, namely the effect average action. And in principle, this action is defined as a modified Legendre transform of the connected Green's function. So what you do to define this is first to introduce classical fields, here denoted by h-bar, psi, and psi-bar. And these fields correspond to the vacuum expansion value of your quantum field evaluated at the cutoff scale k. And what you now do to obtain this effective average action is you perform the Legendre transform of Wk with respect to the classical field, and then you subtract the cutoff term which you have introduced in the formula above. So this should be seen as the definition of the effective average action. And this quantity now depends on your classical field and the background metric B bar. And what you can check for this quantity is that it is invariant under general coordinate transformation of the classical field. So move to the next slide. So now that we have defined this effective average action, we now want to obtain the exact randomization group equation, which is obeyed by this functional. And in order to get this, we take the definition of the gamma k, and we differentiate with respect, take the derivative with the logarithmic derivative of k. So on the left-hand side, you will just get the derivative of gamma k, and by using the definition of wk, you can write the right-hand side in form of a trace. So this is indicated in the formula here. So what you have inside the trace is gamma 2k, which denotes the Hessian, so the second derivative of gamma k with respect to your classical field, and rk as the infrared cutoff in your setup. And similar to the first term, you also obtain a second term in the definition, which involves the contribution from your ghost field. And this phrase looks very similar to the one-loop beta function you get in classical quantum field theory, with two differences. So one is that instead of the bare action of your theory, you now have the effective average action sitting in the trace. and you have modified the trace by the inclusion of an infrared cutoff. And these two modifications make this randomization group functional an exact quantity. So let's move to the next slide and see what we can do with this exact function. So the problem is of evaluating this functional is that even though this is an exact expression, it cannot be solved exactly. So there's no field theory where this is known how to solve this equation. So in order to make use of this formal expression, you have to resort to a non-perturbative approximation scheme. And what one usually does in this respect is one truncates the space of the interaction appearing inside gamma k to the most relevant one. So what is denoted by this most relevant one depends on the problem you are looking at. And for the rest of the talk, we will consider just the simple of this truncation. Namely, we will restrict our effective average action to the Einstein-Hilbert form. So this is given in the formula below. So we have essentially the Einstein-Hilbert action, where the coupling, Newton's coupling, and the cosmological constant are now promoted to randomization group scale dependent quantities. And what we have to supplement in the definition of gamma k are some classical gauge fixing terms. And now we can substitute this ansatz into our exact randomization group equation and then project the resulting randomization group flow on the monomials contained in our ansatz, namely the Einstein-Hilbert term and the cosmological constant. Next slide. And what we obtain by this rather technical procedure is an expression, an explicit expression for the non-perturbative randomization group flow projected to the subspace spanned by Newton's constant and the cosmological constant. So the form of these randomization group equations are given below here. And this is done to give you a feeling that we can really compute this beta function explicitly. So all the symbols that appear on the right-hand side of these equations are well-defined. And here the eta f notes the anomalous dimension of Newton's constant. And if you go to the RG equation for the cosmological constant, then you also have these phi and phi tilde functions here. And what these functions do is they encode the cutoff dependence of your randomization group flow. But if you choose an explicit cutoff scheme, then you can indeed evaluate these RG equation explicitly at the randomization group flow of G and lambda. Next slide. So what I want to do is spend a little bit of time of discussing properties of these randomization group equations, because this will come back later in the cosmological part. So in order to analyze this equation, it's first convenient to switch from the dimensionful Newton constant and cosmological constant to quantities which are dimensionless. And these dimensionless quantities are obtained by scaling your coupling from the dimension for one by appropriate power of your randomization group scale. This is shown in the first formula. And then you can rewrite your beta function in terms of these dimensionless quantities. And what you then find is that you obtain an autonomous system which governs the randomization flow of G and lambda. Next slide. And the first step, if you have this system, is you investigate the fixed point structure, this autonomous equation. And then you find a surprise that there are actually two fixed points of these equations, namely the trivial one, where the dimensionless coupling vanishes, but also a non-trivial fixed point, the so-called non-Gaussian fixed point. This fixed point is value where G and lambda are both positive, and at this point, the functions on the right-hand side vanish simultaneously. Then you can do a stability analysis of your randomization group flow around the fixed point, and this shows that the fixed point is infrared repulsed in both directions, G and lambda. So that means if you integrate out a shell of fluctuation, your coupling constant will be driven the way in the fixed point. And I should remark that by now there's very good evidence that this fixed point also exists in the full theory. So go to the next slide. So having this non-Gaussian fixed point has some very profound consequences. Namely, you can see that for a randomization group trajectory, which emanates from this fixed point, Euclidean quantum gravity becomes an asymptotically free theory. And how you can see this is shown in the formula below. So you are at or very close to this fixed point, then you know that your dimensionless coupling constant G is just a constant, and that you can obtain a dimensionless Newton constant by dividing this dimensionless coupling constant by k squared. So if you now take the k infinity limit, the right-hand side of your equation vanishes identically, and this shows that in the UV, your gravitational coupling goes to zero. And this is a very strong indication that quantum gravity could fall into the class of a so-called non-perturbatively normalizable quantum field. So the underlying idea was proposed by Weinberg some 20 years ago, known as Weinberg's asymptotic scenario. Okay, go to the next slide. But having this beta function, we can do more just looking for fixed points. Having the explicit expression at hand, can look at the full phase diagram of the randomization flow. And this is shown blocked on this slide. So here we have the dimensionless constant on the vertical axis and the cosmological constant on the horizontal axis. And what you see in this plot is the non-Gaussian fixed point in the first quadrant of your plot, and you have randomization group trajectories which start at this point and then flow away from it. So here the arrows in the diagram always point towards decreasing randomization group tail k. And for our purpose, it's important that you have three types of randomization group trajectories which start at this fixed point. Namely, there is type 1a. These are trajectories which flow through the left of the diagram and in the infrared leads to a negative cosmological constant. Then we have one single trajectory which is of type 2a, and this trajectory connects the non-Gaussian fusion point to the fixed point in the origin, and here you would obtain a vanishing cosmological constant in the infrared. And then there are also trajectories of type 3a which flow to the right of your diagram. And for these type 3a trajectories, they have special properties, namely, not very clear from the diagram, the phase space and or has a wall when lambda takes on the value 0.5. So what you cannot do is you cannot take the randomization flow beyond point. So what this means, trajectory of type 3a, that you cannot go to the deep infrared limit, so you take the k goes to 0 limit, but the trajectory terminates at a finite value of this will also be important if we discuss cosmological applications later on. Go to the next slide. So given that phase diagram, you can now ask the question, what is the trajectory, minimalization group trajectory which nature has chosen? And this question was answered recently in a work by Martin Reuter and Olga Wacher, which argue that this randomization trajectory is actually a trajectory type 3a, but has some very special properties. So let's go through the diagram. So again, we have dimensionless Newton constant on the vertical axis and the cosmological constant on the horizontal axis. And your randomization group trajectory, which nature has chosen. So it starts at the non-Gaussian fixed. If you go away from it, you have a regime at the trajectory oscillates around the fixed point, and where you can linearize and go. And then it passes over Gaussian fixed point in the origin. And only in the very last moment, you turn to the right. You not hit the fixed point, but you flow away from it in the infrared. So the particular property of this trajectory is that it is indeed very, very close to this Gaussian. So that's denoted by the 10 to the minus 17. In the diagram. And what this closeness for you is this trajectory gives rise to a very long regime where classical general relativity is valid. So in this framework, classical general relativity provides you an effective theory is that as a very wide range of distance gain. And after this long GR regime indicated by the 1 MP2 on the trajectory, we enter into a regime where the trajectory gets close to the boundary at lambda being 0.5. And it is then argued that in this regime, one should encounter a strong randomization effect, which prevents the trajectory from terminating at the boundary. But so far, it's fair to say it is not known what the infrared effect should be. So let's move to the next slide and see what consequences in cosmology arise from this framework. So in order to set up my notation, let me briefly remind you about the standard cosmological framework, namely that Friedman, Robertson, Walker cosmology, which we will study in the following. So assume that our universe is initially flat, homogeneous and isotropic, and it should then be described by the flat on Robertson Walker metric force formula on the slide. The dynamics of this theory is governed by Einstein's equation, which are the second formula on the slide. So here you have the Einstein tensor to the left, a cosmological constant term, the first term on the right, and a standard energy momentum tensor. This is the second term in your formula. And the assumption of having a homogeneous isotropic universe states that the energy momentum tensor should be diagonal of the form given below. And we assume that we have a standard equation of state related pressure, energy density of your matter system with a equation of state parameter W, which we take up at the moment. And by taking divergence of Einstein's equation, obtain that the conserved energy momentum tensor would be conserved. If we now substitute the Friedman-Robertson-Walker equation and the energy momentum tensor into Einstein's equation, we get our cosmological equation, which govern the cosmological evolution. So here we have the standard Friedman equation, and we obtain standard matter equation. So next slide. So what we want to do now, perform a randomization improvement of these dynamical equations. So what we do is we take Einstein's equation and we promote the cosmological constant and Newton's constant to quantities which depend on the randomization scale K. And what we then is that this randomization scale K be related to cosmological time T. This is a reasonable because, after all, in our homogeneous and isotropic universe, there's only one dimensional T, which we can take as this randomization, which we can take as the cosmological time. There should be a relation between these two quantities. Move to the next slide. And what we get from this improvement scheme are then a new set of equations. So first we have the Friedman equation. And here the difference previous is that the cosmological constant and Newton's constant are now functions of cosmological time t. The conserved energy momentum S still gives rise to the matter equation that stays the same as its non-improved. And in addition to this conservation equation, by taking the covariant derivative of the Einstein equation, you now obtain a second conservation equation, which relates to the time derivative of the cosmological constant and the time derivative of the constant. So that's the equation of our set. Then you also got information, namely from the randomization group running of lambda and so you supplement the set of equations by the beta function govern this running. Go to the next slide. So having set up the system of equations, we can now start and solve it. And this is done in the following way. First, assume we know the arbitrary function, the cutoff identification, and then we can solve the third equation of your set for rho of t. So that's just algebraic. What we can then do next is substitute this solution into the second equation of our set and solve this differential equation for the scale factor a of t. So what you should note at this point is that at this stage our cosmological evolution is completely determined. So we have the function rho of t and a of t, and these tell us how our universe evolves. Go to the next slide. However, in order to obtain a consistent solution of our system of equations, we still have to solve the third equation, namely the first equation of our set. And what we can do with the equation is we can read it as a constraint equation on the function a of t. So what you can do is you can solve differentially for the a of the t, and what you can then the equation for is you can generate the cutoff identity a of e dynamically by just solving the differentiation. Next slide. So what is a priori not clear is that this feature will rise to a reasonable time parameter evolution. But by solving this of randomization trajectory, you find that your cosmological time increases monotonically, decreasing randomization group A. So what this indicates is that this procedure really can make sense and that gets a proper cosmological time out of this setup. Secondly, find that non-Gaussian that your randomization start is identified on the cosmological side with the origin of the universe, namely the point scale factor A develops a singularity and vanishes. Go to the next slide. And the second surprise you encounter with the cosmological improvement is that if you find your meta-density standard way, namely as rho over the critical density of our universe, you can use the solution you just obtained, substitute in there. What you then find is that the relative matter density becomes a function of the dimensionless Newton constant and cosmological constant only. And likewise, this feature propagates to the definition of your deceleration parameter Q. So here in the second equation defined in a standard way, and then expressed in terms of your matter density and cosmological constant energy density. And this will then also be a function of G and lambda only. So what you learn from this is that your relative matter density just depends on where you or randomization group project is evaluated in lambda space. Next slide. And what we can now do is plot this function gm as a function of g and lambda. So this is seen in the figure below. And what you then find is that the matter density increases monotonically if you move from the right to the left in your diagram. So there are some particular features, namely the Gaussian fix which you have in the origin, as omega meta being 1, and you can compute analytically that the non-Gaussian fixed point of your flow sits at omega m and omega lambda being at 1/2. There is one additional surprise in this diagram, namely the line where the matter density becomes 0 does not coincide with the boundary of your theory space, namely lambda being 1/2, but is always located front of this of theory. What this implies for cosmological solution is that you will reach the stage asymptotic the solution, or your randomization trajectory will run in boundary. So concerning your theta function, you will, in the cosmological framework, you will never have to evaluate this theta function in the region, the boundary, where you think about strong randomization group effect. So then let's go to the next slide and look if we can find an interpretation for the cutoff scale K, which we generated dynamically. And there's one natural candidate which could be associated to this cutoff scale, namely the Hubble radius of your cosmological evolution. So what we have done in the diagram shown in this slide is we have plotted the Hubble scale K divided by K over a wide regime of K value. And what you find is the ratio between H and K is almost constant over the entire K value regime. So we take that as very good evidence that the cutoff dynamically generated in this setup is actually proportional to the Hubble scale, and that the proportional between the two quantities is roughly order 1. Go to the next slide. So this established, we can now go and investigate particular example solutions where we look at the cosmological evolution of the universe. This evolution naturally separates into two parts, namely the quantum regime, which on the right involves the randomization flow of the coupled constant up to the entry to the classical regime. And the second part, the classical regime, where the trajectory evolves between the points P1 and P2. So let's first look at the quantum regime. And in this regime, let's assume that the universe is radiation dominated. So we take the equation of the state parameter to be W being constant. And what you discover in this regime is that the evolution of the universe is almost universal. So it doesn't depend on the details of the actual randomization group trajectories which underlie the cosmological evolution. And what you find is that the universe starts at a non-Gaussian point. So there are the, it starts there.
Yeah.
And from that, we next enter into the regime where the RG trajectory encircles non-Gaussian position. And here, translated on the cosmological side, in a period of oscillatory inflation. So the universe expands, and this expansion switches between accelerated and decelerated expansion. That can be seen from the plot of the deceleration parameter with the cosmological time T. However, this oscillatory inflation is not strong enough to explain the inflationary period which had the earlier evolution of the universe. So roughly in the last cycle of this acceleration, you only get one e-fold of expansion. Then the next stage of your RG evolution is the crossover to the Gaussian fixed point. And what you then see is that this translates into the universe entering into a radiation-dominated episode. So in the crossover, the density of the universe becomes very close to the critical density, and we obtain a radiation-dominated universe. So move to the next slide. So what we can then do is go to the next part of our evolution, the classical regime. And what we will do in this regime is assume that the universe is matter-dominated. So we have a state parameter, W equals zero. What we find is that this area completely matter-dominated. So omega m is equal to 1. And this meta-domination is followed by a slow crossover to a universe which is dominated by the cosmological constant. And what happens if we take the randomization group trajectory realized in nature, then this crossover really happens at cosmological So in the diagram, it shows the acceleration time in cosmological time. See that our point marked today roughly at 4.2, And this corresponds to a deceleration parameter, which corresponds to minus 0.6, which is roughly what we observe today. Then we, going further in the cosmological evolution, we find we enter into an asymptotic existence state, and that the cosmological evolution ends before strong randomization Hoppe effect set in. So next slide. Let me summarize what we have seen in the talk. So we have seen that by coupling the randomization proof equations for Newton's constant and the cosmological constant to cosmology, our system of equations generates a physical cutoff spin, which is proportional to the Hubble radius. And we have seen that the RG-improved cosmology have certain very characteristic features, namely that the origin of the universe always starts with the matter and cosmological constant energy density being equal in magnitude. Then we have seen that there is a universal period where the universe undergoes an episode of oscillatory inflation. And we have seen that this RG improvement can explain the matter domination at the beginning of the classical regime, the evolution of our universe. Finally, we have seen that our cosmological evolution ends and prevents the trajectory, randomization proof trajectory, to enter into the regime where we expect strong randomization proof effects. Next slide. So what I think is that this scenario offers plenty of more possibilities to explore, and at the moment we are thinking about if we can improve this scenario in such a way that it naturally explains inflationary phase observed in our universe due to gravitational effects. But this is work in progress. And with this, I would like to end the talk.
Thank you, Frank. Can you hear me?
Yes, I'm still there.
Okay. So the usual custom for efficiency is that we do go for comments and questions group by group. So at Penn State, people have comments or questions. Martin, Param, Tomash.
Hello, Abhay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have one question. So my question is that you assume that if you have radiation-dominated universe, then you can have phase of oscillatory inflation in the very early universe. But suppose if you do not have a radiation-dominated universe, suppose if you have an inflaton itself coming from standard inflationary models, then how does this these RD corrections they affect the standard inflation?
I should say that the coupling of a standard inflaton field to this scenario has not yet been investigated. But the origin of this oscillatory inflation is due to the oscillation of your randomization proof trajectory around the fixed point. So if you don't change this by including matter, you would still think that this oscillation are still there, but might be superposed by the usual inflationary phase.
I have one more question.
Yes.
And that is that does your scenario predict any small curvature effects? Are there any effects which we can see in the present epoch of the universe?
No, so far we haven't made any tangible prediction.
Okay, that's all.
Any other questions?
Any other questions from Penn State?
Okay, perimeter, any questions?
Yes, one.
Please.
Hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
So your approach neglected the higher order terms, just worked with the Einstein-Hilbert truncation. Safe to do so in order to address this question for cosmology?
To include higher order terms in your gravitational action?
Yes, I mean, neglecting, using only the Einstein-Hilbert truncation, is that reliable? So we expect
from the point of view of the randomization group flow, there are indications this approximation is indeed reliable. So this has been tested by including R squared terms in addition, and then you found that the picture that underlies the RG flow is not really changing much, only a little bit, but the role of higher curvature terms on the cosmological evolution has not been investigated yet.
Thank you.
But, Frank, if on the
yes,
other hand,
yes.
you know that from the full theory, the higher order terms do not change the RG flow very much. Why would you expect different things to come up in cosmology? Would it not be the case automatically that the changes induced by the higher order terms would also be negligible in the cosmological context?
But here you have the point that the cosmological equation change rather drastically in structure if you include the R squared term. So then you can have phenomena like having found new universes which do not occur if you have just the R term. So then it's not clear that these structural changes do not affect your cosmological evolution. At least it's not clear to me.
That's what I also think. So this actually takes me to a question, which is really what were the various assumptions that were made in the analysis beyond the RG flow analysis, right? In other words, when you came to cosmology, what all did we assume? So as you said, first assumption was that this truncation is quite important because you actually used basically the classical cosmological equations Newton's constant and cosmological constant scale dependent and supplemented them with other equations. The second assumption seems to me, kind of underlying the whole thing, is that one really does the full RG analysis in the Euclidean domain, get some behavior, some beta functions or a behavior of the functional dependence of the coupling constant on the scale K from this Euclidean theory, and one just assumes it without change or without any kind of detailed justification that the same is true in the Lorentzian theory. I agree that this is the simplest thing one can do, but as I see it, there is no a priori justification. Am I correct?
Mm,
Frank, are you with me? Are you here? Okay.
I'm still there.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But I think I don't have much to say about this point.
Okay. And then, so the third assumption, so the first assumption was ignoring the higher curvature terms in the equation. The second was transition from Euclidean to the Lorentzian thing. And it seems to me that there is a third assumption, which then was partially justified, which is that somehow the renormalization group scale is really a function of time only, so to say. It's a function of time, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree that there is some justification. I mean, consistency with this assumption at the end, but nonetheless, I would say that this is an assumption. Would you agree?
That that you identify the randomization group scale with, yes, that's an assumption.
Okay. Okay. There are some other comments and questions here in Pescara, so I pass you on to other people.
Okay.
Just 1 second.
Do you hear me?
Yes.
Let me tune the volume. So my name is Gulbadian. I have several comments.
Mm-hmm.
One, that the Renorm group approach was used by Shapiro collaborators. Whether you are aware about this work. I mean about the cosmological constant problem.
Yes. I know that there are several groups which have done this before, but I think the difference is that we put in a certain form of the beta functions which underlie the spanning, while most other work take an ad hoc scale or time dependence of G and lambda.
So my second comment is the following. Among the assumptions, it's crucial the assumption of the identification of the scale of the K with the upper distance of the length. So some arbitrariness is clear here.
Was this another question? I didn't understand the question. Maybe Abai, could you repeat?
So the identification of the scale of the K is the Hubble distance. It's a grid and then a function which needs some justification.
I'm sorry, I can't understand the question. Maybe could you pass?
Yeah, I can.
Could you pass the connection to Abai that he repeats for you?
Yeah. So can you hear me? This is Abai.
Yes, that's a lot better.
Okay. So the question is, you seem to have an additional assumption that the scale K in the effective action framework is tied to the Hubble radius. And the question was, do you agree that this is an assumption?
No, that's not an assumption. That comes out of the analysis. That we didn't put in by hand, and it could have been everything, but it came out of the equation that it's really tied to the Hubble radius.
So maybe I can try to say my understanding, and then you can agree or disagree. My understanding was that there was an assumption, but not this one. The assumption was that the Hubble, that the scale K was a function of time. But once this assumption was made, you got, by consistent procedure, a bunch of equations, and you then just solved them, and the conclusion was that K is essentially related to the Hubble scale. Is this understanding correct?
This understanding is correct, yes.
Okay.
Sorry, you have some kind of feedback if you are talking, so I cannot understand this.